I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Filmcast, a podcast about movies. I'm David Chen, and Fight or Flight, more like Con Air. Am I right, guys? Joining me today is Devinder Hardwar.
Fight or Flight's a pretty great title, but they could have just gone for Double Decker. Nothing wrong with that, right? It rolls right off the tongue. Double Decker. Nobody will make fun of that title.
And Jeff Cannata.
I just saw Fight or Flight, and boy, are my arms tired.
Those are vague and oblique references to the fact that today on the podcast, we're going to be reviewing Fight or Flight. Now, we did put this up to a vote at the Patreon page at patreon.com/filmpodcast. We asked people to vote on Last Bullet, which is streaming right now on Netflix, or Fight or Flight. And 700 people voted, or 695 to be exact. 38% of them voted for Last Bullet, 62% for Fight or Flight. That is why it is the movie we are going to be reviewing this week. However, that was a big showing for Last Bullet. It was a really strong show for Last Bullet, and as a result of that and also Devinder's recommendations, I decided to start watching the Lost Bullet franchise.
There we go.
This week. Last Bullet was the third film that premiered on Netflix. We'll be talking about some of that stuff in what we've been watching this week. You can find more episodes of the show at thefilmcast.com. Email us at slashfilmcast@gmail.com. We got some what we've been watching for you today before we get to our review of Fight or Flight. So, folks, let's get into it. Let's talk about what we've been watching this week. So one of the things that I had a chance to watch this week is the new documentary about the making of the John Wick franchise called Wick is Pain. And this is a documentary that I think premiered at, I want to say, Beyond Fest, and then was released on video on demand. You can buy it for $10. I started watching this, and I actually texted Devinder. I was like, Devinder, you got to watch this because Devinder and I, one of our first bonding experiences was over The Matrix and The Matrix Revisited and The Matrix, the animated, what is it called? What was that called?
The Animatrix.
Yeah. And
the advent of good choreography in American films. Like we had a lot of conversations about that. Yeah.
And of course, that's where the conversation about John Wick began, because Keanu Reeves was in The Matrix and he worked with some of the people that he worked with in John Wick when he was in The Matrix and so forth. And that's all covered in this documentary, Wick is Pain. Now, I want to say first up that I like this documentary, Wick is Pain. It provides a good overview of what this franchise means to Keanu Reeves, how it was started, what its legacy is. It is not a great documentary to watch to understand how they did all the action set pieces in the
Boo.
Those already exist, Jeff. They're in the featurettes on the Blu-rays and on the video demand.
Real fans know.
Jeff. Yeah. All that stuff you didn't watch that you may own, it's already there. So,
isn't this documentary like 2 hours plus long?
It's 2 hours long, and really,
there's drama, Jeff. There is drama.
Action choreography, BTS.
They have some of it, right? But that's not really what it's about. What really you get with this documentary is you get Chad Stahelski, who's directed all four of the John Wick movies, and Keanu Reeves hanging out, talking with each other and with the interviewers, watching scenes from John Wick. and kind of reflecting on what how this came to be and its role in their lives. That's
so you're saying it's a audio commentary that pivoted to video. Is that what
that's
this
right.
is?
It's basically it's a
like that. Yeah,
it could. It's the first movie that could have been a podcast. Is kind of what I'm trying to say. It was.
I mean, that's how I partially watched it too. So
yeah. I mean, yeah. But I actually got a lot out of this. I think I took a few notes on some cool stuff I learned. But before I get to that, Devendra, I think you also had a chance to watch this as well, right?
Yeah, I watched it. You didn't just text me about it, Dave. You blew up my text with like five messages. I'm like, is David Chen having a heart attack? Because this man is not a multi-texter. Okay, that's an emergency. But it was it was a WIC emergency, folks. Uh-huh. So
a WIC emergency.
It was a WIC emergency. And yes, so thank you for encouraging me to watch this movie, Dave, and also for sending me the money to watch it. You didn't need to do that. But also, this is a great documentary. Like, I think I can tell, like, when I'm learning new stuff really quickly, if you're not just, like, wasting my time, that's a good sign that we're onto new stuff here. And I got some of that within 10 minutes. Like, the whole thing about, I feel like I knew this at some point. But I feel like I heard the story about Chad Stahelski being Brandon Lee's, stunt double on The Crow and being essentially the guy who replaced him. But that fact just like yeeted out of my brain, just totally forgot it. But then in this documentary, he is talking about how that it was a formative experience for him.
Yeah.
And that is also a good through line, too, because the whole Brandon Lee thing, like that was around the time when American movies were getting good choreography, because you literally have the son of Bruce Lee. He's doing good stuff. He was doing stunt work too, but the movies he was in, so hearing him talk about that experience of essentially replacing Brandon Lee too, like that was all kind of effective. But everything else, like who's the other director? The other director on John
David Lynch.
David Lynch, yeah. And seeing like their relationship too, I was like, I've always wondered what happened there.
What happened? What happened?
Because John Wick 1 is co-directed.
John Wick Chapter 1 has two directors, and all the rest of the John Wicks only have one director. And this documentary explains with warts and all, like how that all played out with their relationship.
And Stahelski is like all Wick. And David Lynch went on to do other stuff, and like he got Atomic Blonde, and like that was like a big rift apparently for him to go off and do that. But it was I've been thinking about that for years. Like what did happen there? And this documentary kind of gives you a taste of that. So I appreciated that.
There's a really cool moment towards the very beginning of the documentary when Keanu Reeves talking about how, like he always wanted to find his director, like the guy that was hit, you know, because there's a lot
Scorsese,
of people like Scorsese works with like Leonardo DiCaprio all the time, right? And it's like he wants to have like that relationship with like who is Keanu Reeves Scorsese, and it is Chad Stahelski, right? He is the guy that has revitalized Keanu Reeves' career. It's been basically a decade of Keanu Reeves' life working on these movies, and it came at a point when his career was not doing very well. Like he had just made 47 Ronin, he made The Man of Tai Chi, which is not well received particularly.
We loved it, but box office wise,
no one saw it. There were a few cool things I really appreciate about the documentary. I'm not going to highlight everything, but I'll highlight a few things. First of all, when we watched John Wick 1, we're like, oh, wow, look at these amazing wide shots, long continuous shots. Wow, you can actually see the action. It's amazing. You find out watching Wick is Pain that the reason that that's the case is because they basically didn't have enough money for the coverage. And so they're like, we can only do like one camera. And, you know...
Good.
It birthed like this kind of style of filming these scenes that actually looks amazing.
I find more common in art than not.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's the limitations that lead to innovation, and that's why when we have some folks who reach a point where no one says no to them anymore,
right?
Their work suffers. Because,
just look at M. Night, you know, the same situation happened. I mean, with M. Night Shyamalan,
The examples are legion, right? Yeah. And it's very few people who get the keys to the kingdom and actually still innovate and do amazing things.
Yeah.
I would put James Cameron on that list. People who can do whatever he wants, has no boundaries left to him, and yet still sort of finds new ways to challenge himself. I don't know.
I can agree with you, Jeff, on that one.
Yeah.
I'll plus one that. One of the things I thought was really fascinating was that like CG is what helped them to make the John Wick movies. Like prior to the advent of CG and really good visual effects for guns, you'd have to shoot blanks, right? And a blank is still a real gun.
Yep.
It's a real gun and it's shooting. It's dangerous. It can actually kill you if you do it incorrectly.
Chad Stahelski would know about the dangers of that.
Right. Yeah.
Yes.
And because of the way it's done, like whenever you fire a gun, you need to like stop the camera and like make sure everything went off okay and, you know, reset everything. But because they're not doing that anymore, they're not using blanks anymore, they are able to then do long continuous takes without like needing to reset or be careful in that way. Which I thought was kind of cool. Like, basically, technology helped to make the John Wick movies possible.
Yeah, gun foo is only possible if you're not actually unloading charges at people's faces constantly.
Exactly right.
There are also some fun little tidbits. Like, there's a Jason Statham thing that I thought was kind of
that
funny.
That was like, super fascinating. So essentially, Jason Statham was in this movie called Safe, right? So Chad Stahelski and David Lynch, basically worked together on this company that is a full-service action scene company.
Yeah.
And essentially what they do is it's like, hey, if you want an action scene in your movie, we can do it. We can cast it, we can do the choreography.
We worked on the Matrix. We can make it look good.
You know, like, it's like that's their whole thing. And then they ended up getting hired to direct John Wick and then, you know, use the company. But essentially they worked on all these other movies, including Jason Statham's Safe. And so they did this pre-visualization thing where they're like, "Hey, what if the action in Jason Statham's Safe was like Aikido and jiu-jitsu, except you're holding a gun."
What if you punch and gun, Jason Statham?
At the same time. And so they did all this pre-visualization where they show Jason Statham, like they show like people like doing the John Wick style of action. Mm-hmm. And like, "Hey, Jason Statham, the action in your movie can be like this." And Jason Statham was like, "No, thanks. I don't want to do that."
Nah, mate.
And Safe basically doesn't have that action. But when they're coming up with John Wick, they're like, "Hey, get out the pre-visualization tapes for Safe. We're just going to use that in John Wick."
Yeah.
And it's like, guys, thank God Jason Statham didn't want to use.
But imagine being Jason Statham. Maybe he didn't even fully clock this, like what happened here. What missed him by?
Right.
But he could have had the quality of John Wick in his thing.
Yeah. He just sits down on one evening, is like, "I'm going to watch this Wick is Pain documentary." I'm a big fan of what they pulled off in those. Wait, what?
Pretty much. So that was interesting, and you really kind of appreciate how hard it is to make any movie. You know, like this movie almost fell apart multiple times. At one point, they had lost $6 million in financing, and then Eva Longoria came in at the last minute and helped to plug in the gap, and that's why Eva Longoria is a producer on John Wick Chapter 1, if you've seen that movie. So so all these like interesting tidbits, but really it's like, oh wow, it was really hard to get this movie made. It's really hard to get any movie made. It's a miracle this movie was made.
My understanding, David, is that if you prey upon a North Star and your heart is true, Eva Longoria will come in and save the day. That's my understanding.
That does sound right to me.
Yeah.
That does sound right to me. But it also made me reflect a lot on like, what is it that makes John Wick different than other franchises, right? Because we're going to talk about a couple action movies on the podcast today. And I don't think maybe Last Bullet, arguably, but like they don't have the cultural relevance and staying power of John Wick. And I've been thinking a lot about this. And I think there's a combination of, number one, there's actual innovation with the fighting style that was in John Wick, right? It is a style of fighting that has not been seen before. It's John Wick gun fu. Closest thing is Equilibrium with Christian Bale, right? Like that is like what you see in John Wick. But it's genuinely unique. It has a very specific look. And also the world building in John Wick, despite the fact that I think it's kind of up its own ass, hand jerking off motion in the air, it is something that I think people were intrigued by and wanted to see more of. And I think the combination of like innovative action and interesting world makes it.
And Keanu.
Like, Keanu. Right.
People love Keanu.
Keanu.
Do not minimize Keanu's physical talents. Mm-hmm. Like he's a charismatic guy just as a guy, but I think there's a through line from The Matrix to the John Wick franchises that he has the physical prowess
yeah.
to pull off this stuff and make it look good. And not every actor can do that. Mm-hmm. It's
a lot of it's just like basically running into walls, like hurting himself, breaking bones. It's rough for
well, you see, Keanu. Like yeah. it's just agonizing pain to do this.
Yeah.
Yes. And then the thing is, what's amazing is he loves doing it. Like
yeah.
You don't come back to do this four times unless you love doing it. And even though he is ripping his body to shreds, he's like, he's still really excited and joyful about it every single time. It's fascinating to watch. So yeah, those are some of the key components. Like you have the star power of yep. Keanu, you have this amazing innovative action, you have this world building, kind of like lightning in a bottle. And
Dead
it's just
dog revenge. Also, somebody kills a dog, get all of them, kill all of those people. Yeah,
it's interesting yeah. to reflect on how the like fight or flight, right? In like, what is fight or flight missing that mm-hmm. John Wick has, right? Why, like. It maybe I'm gonna be wrong and Fight or Flight's gonna become a huge franchise 10 years from now. Like, I don't know. Doesn't seem like it to me.
No.
And it's like what makes an action, what elevates an action movie and transcends, you know, mm-hmm. it from being just kind of a B movie rental to like this is an international phenomenon that has millions of fans. And
I think part of yeah. it too is like the struggle. And I love a movie where you can feel the struggle. Like these guys, they barely had money to make this.
Yeah.
They've never made a movie before. Everything is on the line. Their entire careers are on the line to do this thing. Also, apparently, actually, both of the co-directors were like at each other's throats while doing
right.
it. Stahelski was going through a divorce to, I didn't realize this, Heidi Moneymaker, who did the action for a movie you just saw, Thunderbolts. So like we
oh,
kind of
wow.
see the three. She did that. So it's like, oh, I'm
imagine
mapping
what
all
their
this stuff.
Marital together. Fights are like,
yeah, yeah, it'll be like Mr. and Mrs. Smith, but they're going through so much. And then there's talk about like, also they didn't want to just be the action guys, so they filmed like weeks of Keanu just moping around that damn house. And that I thought was hilarious because
that was
that
hilarious.
Movie,
yeah,
that
yeah.
first movie is just like it is 30 minutes of Keanu moping around the house, and then it gets to John Wick, but you gotta stabilize somewhere. So. You feel the struggle, I think, in that movie to make something good, but also they are geeks. Like they are the sort of people who be like, you know, Mark Dacascos, you talk to a normal human being, right? They have no idea who the guy from Iron Chef, maybe you get that. Nobody is like, oh, Mark Dacascos from Only the Strong.
Devendra has been a fan of Mark Dacascos
yes.
for decades. And so when Mark Dacascos shows up in, I think, John Wick 2
three.
Or 3, right?
Three, yeah.
You know, I was like, oh,
you
my.
You feel seen.
Devendra's going to lose his mind.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So
Followed up by Donnie Yen in 4, by
oh,
the way.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Incredible. So
they're making movies for us.
Yeah, they're making movies for us. So that was some of the funniest parts was these are action directors. Like, they're
yes.
so, they have a chip on their shoulder. They're worried that people are going to not take them seriously as dramatic directors. So they filmed all these scenes of Keanu, like looking sad, like a week of just Keanu Reeves looking sad in John Wick 1.
They said 3 days of him not saying a word, just filming him in the house.
And one of my favorite moments was like, there was an entire thing cut out of Keanu Reeves. John Wick is apparently a bookbinder. Like this is not a joke. Like
yes.
they filmed Keanu Reeves, like quietly moping and doing bookbinding while his wife was dead. To show that he's really into precision and he's an exacting person. And they cut all that out because you don't need any.
They
of
had
shit.
Limited days to
yeah,
shoot.
Yeah.
They burned days of useless moping footage. God.
Yeah. But it's like, you don't know, you know, they were learning mm-hmm. how to become filmmakers as you go along. That's one of the great things about the documentaries. You see, they're just learning what it's like to be a filmmaker. And there's some joy and also pain in that. But anyway, really cool documentary.
Good stuff.
Yeah. Wick is Pain, name of the documentary. It's about the John Wick franchise. Check it out. It's available wherever you get video on demand movies. It's one thing me and Devendra Hardwar have been watching this week. Let's take a break for a sponsor. We'll be back with more what we've been watching right after this.
This episode of the Filmcast is brought to you by BetterHelp. Are you tending to your mental health? Are you thinking about it? Are you caring about your mind as much as your body? More people are. Mental health awareness is growing, but there's still progress to be made. 26% of Americans who participated in a recent survey say that they have avoided seeking mental health support due to fear of judgment. That's unfortunate.
people hesitate to get help. It doesn't just affect them. It impacts their families, their workplaces, their entire communities. This is Mental Health Awareness Month. So let's encourage everyone to take care of their well-being and break that stigma. Because mental health is health. I certainly have benefited from talking to a therapist, from analyzing my inner life as much as I analyze my, you know, physical well-being. We need to learn these positive coping skills, how to set boundaries, ways to empower yourself to be the best version of yourself. This isn't just for people that have experienced major trauma. It's for all of us. And BetterHelp has over 10 years of experience matching people with the right therapist. From their diverse network of more than 30,000 licensed therapists with a wide range of specialties, BetterHelp is fully online, making therapy affordable and convenient. And it serves over 5 million people worldwide. Plus, you can always switch your therapist easily, anytime, at no extra cost. We are all better with help. Visit BetterHelp.com/filmcast to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/filmcast, FILMCAST.
Hey, before we continue with what Devinger has been watching, I do want to mention that on the After Dark this week, we're going to try or do something a little different. Patreon.com/filmpodcast. We're going to be reviewing Final Destination Bloodlines next week on the podcast. And in advance of that, we are going to be reviewing the first Final Destination movie, which is, you know, Final Destination, one of my favorite franchises.
Yep.
It is a franchise that Jeff Cannata has never watched.
That's right.
This is a Jeff first.
So this is a first for Jeff, his first time watching Final Destination. You can hear that at patreon.com/filmpodcast. We're going to be discussing it this week in advance of our review of Final Destination Bloodlines. Really excited about that one because I'm just so curious what Jeff thinks about this thing that's been a part of my life for so many years. You know, this is like when I watched Tombstone. This is my Tombstone, Jeff.
Is this your Tombstone?
Not quite.
It's kind of a, at least part two, by the way, is kind of a whole generation's Tombstone. It's like, it's a whole thing there.
Tombstones are featured in the movie.
Yes, anyway. It's true. In fact,
it's about Tombstones.
What if we made a movie that's all Tombstones?
Yes.
It's just about death.
Just Tombstones.
Yeah. All right.
What do we call it?
Check out our Final Destination conversation at patreon.com/filmpodcast. Devinder Hardwar, hit us up with something you've watched this week.
Yeah, I got to see Last Bullet, which, by the way, I want to make it clear for listeners, that was the choice to review. And we left it up to our Patreon members, and you all betrayed me. They blew it. You betrayed me. You went for Fight or Flight because Josh Hartnett is pretty. Okay, I see how it is. No, that was originally the plan. So I saw Last Bullet. This is the Lost. It's basically Lost Bullet 3.
Okay, I watched Lost Bullet 1.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was going to watch those. I actually watched Lost Bullet 1 and 3. I skipped number 2. Let me just say this.
Yep.
I think the audience made the right choice because.
Wow.
Watching. No.
Three on its own is.
Three
rough.
On its own yeah. is not comprehensible. Now, these yeah. are awesome movies.
Yes.
These are awesome movies that I recommend. But you have to watch all three of them. And it's like, you that's have to a watch lot all to three. Ask of people. So
it's a direct. Yeah. Narrative.
Before we talk about Last Bullet, though, Devendra, I want to just. I want to make a title question because we like being pedantic about titles, right? Lost Bullet, these are French movies. Mm-hmm. And so it's called Ball Perdu in French, which means Lost Bullet. And Lost Bullet 2 is Ball Perdu 2 or Lost Bullet 2. And then Lost, the final movie in the franchise is called Ball Perdu 3. Or Lost Bullet 3 in French, but in American, they changed the title to just be Last Bullet.
I kind of like it, though.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask
kind of like
Jeff
it.
As somebody who has no investment in this franchise at all, what do you think of that? Like,
yeah, that's
they
awesome.
Changed the French title. Love you like it. You like
Lost
it.
Bullet, Last Bullet. I like it.
Lost
I
Bullet think, 1, Lost Bullet 2, and then Last Bullet. Yes.
I think the second one should have been called List second Bullet.
Bullet. What'd you say?
Just
Lust,
change
Lust
the
It should have been Lust Bullet.
Lest Bullet.
Lest Bullet. Lust Bullet. Because they love the bullets.
Lust Bullet.
Lust Bullet.
Ooh, that's a good one.
All right,
lusting after bullets.
I will say, Devendra, I watched Lost Bullet 1 to kind of get caught up with this world.
And actually, 1 is more important to get into 3.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yes. It's very relevant to what happens in 3. And I thought this movie was great. It honestly reminded me of Fast and Furious 1. Like, that's the thing it most reminded me of.
This guy should be doing Fast and Furious movies, basically. Right. Yeah.
The vehicular action in these movies is top-notch. And in fact, like, arguably better than what Fast and Furious is doing right now, because it looks like they actually went and did it for real.
A lot of real things getting destroyed and flipped, and it looks good. Yeah.
But the Lost Bullet franchise is about this guy who's really good at driving and being a mechanic.
Love it.
And he goes to jail, and then
how does he feel about family?
There's a lot of family in this
It's shockingly
in this
important to him, actually.
Yeah.
Wow.
But he just doesn't blather on about it like Vin Diesel does. He just you know, the French are not
Frenchmen.
Yeah. But anyway, it has some, it's kind of this, the first movie is kind of this like hard boiled, you know, action film where like he's rooting out corruption in the police department, blah, blah, blah. But the action is great. It's like, it looks really like they did it for real. And I think the movie's just become more and more ambitious, and culminating in Last Bullet, which is the third film, which came out this weekend on Netflix. Devendra, what'd you think of it?
Loved it. Freaking loved it. And the best way I can describe it is, like, we're going to talk about Fight or Flight, which I think it's fast food. Fight or Flight, easy breezy action movie. You're in and you're out. Like, oh, this is fun. They're doing fun stuff here. Last Bullet is a goddamn meal. It is a several course meal of like, oh, you're bringing in the plot from Last Bullet 1. Oh, I care about these characters, but also it's not just going to be fight scenes in a single airplane set, you know, love you, Fight or Flight, but that's what you are. This movie is not, we're going to have relentless vehicular destruction. There's actually not as much hand-to-hand fighting as some of the other movies, but there's like one really good fight scene, which is my favorite thing. We talked about this during Thunderbolts of like, people fighting different people for multiple people having a fight, but in between like different targets and stuff like that. That's always fun. It's really the vehicular destruction and the clarity of the action. Like, I think I've honestly missed seeing like, oh, that's, you just really destroyed a helicopter. You just really flipped a semi truck. Basically, there's a lot of good stuff here that I feel like we have not seen much in big action movies lately. So I don't know. I appreciate all that. And also, yeah, brings back the threads from the first one. I think this movie is so good. It is so good for action fans.
Yeah, I basically agree with Devendra. Let me tell you how good some of the action in this movie was. Mm-hmm. Is I did something I haven't done in a while, which is I was watching one of the action scenes in Last Bullet, and I saw it play out, and then I actually paused and rewound it to rewatch that sequence like right away, like right after I saw it, because I was like, holy shit, that was really well done. Like, there's a number of scenes like that where it's just like, wow, they put a lot of work into it. And I'm surprised that no one's dead. It's kind of like Mad Max Fury Road in some ways, where you're like watching this stuff. It's like, how did they do that? And everyone survives.
Also has some of my favorite things. Fast car chases through tight European streets. Love it. Love to see it. This movie has a lot of that.
That feels like a list on your app. Why can't I never think of that name of that app?
Letterbox.
Yeah, thank you. It feels like a Letterbox
list.
Oh,
you kill it on Letterbox, Jeff. Yeah.
Movies with fast car chases down tight European streets.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think one of the unfortunate things about Lost Bullet 1 and I guess 2 and 3 is that part of the movie is about stopping drug runners, right? Like they want to stop people. The premise of Lost Bullet 1 is, hey, there's people running drugs around France and we need to stop them. But the problem is when we try to run them off the road, they completely annihilate our vehicles. So we need you to help us like build like better vehicles that won't get destroyed. And these drug runners are called Go Fast drug runners. That's
listen.
The name.
Listen,
it's like, hey, we got to stop the Go Fast. And I have to say, that is a very silly sounding name for what
I imagine
is a serious topic.
The segment of the audience, the culture segment of our audience who loves and appreciates Michael Mann's Miami Vice remake understands why that is. Why that movie was all about go fast boats. That movie was all about Colin Farrell saying, "Gotta get the go fast boats. Gotta go fast." It sounds cool to me, but yes, it's silly. It is.
It does not sound cool to me. And also, if you watch the dub, it's very silly because it's like, it's like we have to stop the go fast. You know, it's like, oh man, he was killed at the go fast. It's like, all right. This is hard to take seriously.
Colin Farrell saying go fast boats is still very cool to me. Come on, that's me.
I've always been more of a slow and meandering drug runner myself.
Mm-hmm. 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 That's fair. That's fair. But yeah, Last Bullet, this is a great action filmmaking. It's great action filmmaking. And I would say you need to watch all the movies. Like, don't
in order.
Do not try and watch them one by one. Like, start with Lost Bullet 1, go to Lost Bullet 2, watch Last Bullet. But it is worth it if you are into action movies, specifically French action movies. Like, it's really, really, really well done. And
which is the best of the three?
Yeah. What do you think, Devendra?
I like 2 a lot, but this one just goes harder. Like, it does escalate. And I feel like they got bigger budgets with every film too. So, I think this one is the best of them.
Like John Wick in that same way, where like they're trying to like one up themselves, right? They like each one like escalates in terms of ambition and scope and size, and so probably Last Bullet being like the culminating one. So, anyway, Last Bullet is the name of the movie. It's on Netflix right now. It's something Devendra Hardwar and I have been watching. Check it out. Jeff Cannata, hit us up with something you've been watching.
Well, my wife and I checked out a new half-hour comedy that has hit Netflix. It's called Four Seasons. This is based on a film that I have never seen, but now I really want to. It's the same title, Four Seasons. It was written and directed by Alan Alda in 1981 and co-stars Carol Burnett. I never heard of this movie. I don't know how I missed it. It feels like a movie I should have seen in my dad's old VHS collection, and yet never saw it. So now I want to check this out. But anyway, this is a wild thing to me because not that long ago, this would be, hey, we're going to remake that old Alan Alda movie with a great new cast of. You know, our Carol Burnett, Tina Fey, our Alan Alda, Steve Carell. You know, I feel like this makes sense. Not too long ago, they would have done this and it would have been a film. You don't make films like this anymore. You don't make movies for adults that are just sort of smart comedies and release them as a film. No. That, my friends, is a prestige television show you're describing. And so that's what happened. Instead of this being a remake of the movie, which, again, not that long ago, that's exactly what this would have been. It instead is an 8-episode prestige television show on Netflix. So you have what was, you know, a however long movie, hour and 45-minute movie, and now it is 8 half-hour episodes. So really interesting. And I really intended to go and watch the 1981 movie after I finished the show and see just how different it is, how much they added, because it has to be a lot, right? It's a much, much longer experience. But I haven't quite finished the season yet. My wife and I are halfway through. We've watched 4 of the 8. It is, as the title may suggest, it's called Four Seasons. Every 2 episodes, you're in a new season. So I believe it starts in spring, then summer. That's as far as I've gotten, but there's 2 more seasons coming. And it focuses on 3 couples that are good friends and have been friends for a long, long time. And just people you want to hang out with. I mean, it's Will Forte. It's just delightful humans that like each other, that are all witty and fun-loving and of a certain age that I appreciate. This is a show about people in their late 40s, early 50s, and it's not about their relationship with their children, which is almost all you get if you get stuff about people that age. These are couples that actually have interior lives and interesting things to think, and they're in a certain part of their life that, often don't really get looked at in media. And I liked that about it. You know, they, some of them have kids. We don't, they're just sort of side parts of the story. They're not about their relationship with their, you know, with a younger generation. It's about their lives and their relationships and their marriages and how hard marriage could be. And all the while, really funny, really, really funny. My friend actually recommended the show to me. He's like, you got to watch Four Seasons. It's really good. And I was like, the only Four Seasons I've ever enjoyed are Four Seasons Landscaping and More, which is still the funniest thing that's ever happened in the world. But this one is right up there with being as funny. And I found myself just texting him quotes as I was watching the show of things that were making me laugh. And it kept happening when I was like, oh, I got to text him that quote. Very funny show. Great, great cast. I think this is a really easy recommend if you like, you know, half hour comedies that look like movies, feel like movies, and have all these wonderful people in them that I've enjoyed in other things. I think this is sharply written. Alan Alda himself makes a cameo in one of the first episodes, which is fun to see him. It makes me want to go back and watch that the film that he cared enough about to write, direct, and star in with Carol Burnett. But Four Seasons on Netflix, easy recommend, especially if you're looking, as I and my wife always are, for a fun half-hour aperitif of a show.
Very cool. Yeah. Sounds like a delight, Jeff. Four Seasons on Netflix is the show that Jeff's talking about. Check it out. Speaking of delightful aperitifs, got to remind people that Poker Face on Peacock is back.
Oh, yeah.
You guys have a chance to check this out yet?
Not yet.
Very excited. Yeah. Very excited. Love that show.
I watched the first episode. It's directed by Rian Johnson. And the show is delight. You know, yeah. It is a delight. Like, I was watching it and I was thinking, Jeff, you would love this episode. Because what's great about Poker Face is, number one, it knows, like, it's obviously a huge fan of this genre, this Columbo-esque genre, right, of this person coming in from the outside who everyone underestimates and ends up solving the crime. But also, Poker Face itself has created its own formula, right? Where, in general, I think most of the episodes, you learn who is the killer in the opening moments of the episode.
Yeah.
And so it's never about solving who is the killer. It's about
it's a whodunit.
Whodunit, right. It's about how they did it, why they did it, and so on. And Charlie Cale, the main actor or the main character in the show, can tell whenever somebody is lying. And what's cool about this is the people who made the show know that you, the audience, know that, and they are going to try to, it's like an arms race where they're trying to like trick you, or not trick you, but like, I guess they are playing with your expectations of what is possible, given all the stuff the audience knows, not just about the genre, but about the show itself. It's like,
it's a giant game of drink the Iocane powder.
Right. And also like, how do you make it interesting? What are ways to make it interesting where you have a character who has a superpower? You already know who the killer is, right? So then how do you make that interesting given that like all that information is already revealed to the audience? And having seen episode one, the show does make it interesting and it's really delight. I had a great time with the first episode, and there's three episodes live right now. There's going to be 12 throughout season two. Feels like a miracle that we have a show like this is available. Like every episode is, you know, basically it's an anthology show pretty much. Like every episode has its own cast of characters, its own storylines with one unifying character of Charlie Cale played by Natasha Lyonne. Grateful the show's on the air. Grateful we have the show. If you like procedurals like Columbo, you'll have a great time with Poker Face season two. It is a show you can kind of hop into without having seen season one.
End in like a really something big's gonna happen.
Yeah, there are some serialized elements like that, like you won't understand if you haven't seen season one, but you can get like 90% of the enjoyment of the show without having seen the first.
Also, season one is incredible. So
yeah, season one's great.
Season one's so good. It had a sort of meta storyline even through the, you know, story of the week.
Yeah, right.
Does this one establish more of that?
It continues that.
Great.
But it so far through the first episode, it's not really a huge focus. But yeah, I would say you can get 90% of the enjoyment of watching the show mm-hmm. without having seen the first season, but you should watch the first season if you can.
It's just less joy in your life. Why would you do that?
That's right. That's right. Well, you know me, Devendra. That's my whole thing. So,
One thing I want to point out here, like, I cannot wait to see this. Did you guys see that news about Natasha Lyonne and Britt Marling doing a movie, but also like there was AI involved and people got really pissed really quickly? Mm. I don't know what's up with that, but that is the thing that's apparently happening. Yeah.
We'll see
Uncanny
how that
Valley out. is the thing, but yeah, they are considering using, I believe, generative AI in some aspect of it, and people are really pissed off. Yeah, weird.
They have said it is on trained. The AI are trained on licensed content, so
that's something.
Anyway, yeah. I'm sure we'll hear more about that in the future. Poker Face, available right now on Peacock.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit. Track budgets and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Jeff Cannata. I know a show has come back that you know, I actually want to get into this, Jeff, because I want to be with you in this.
Be with me in this, David.
I want to be with you in this because I know this is a big thing to be with you in this, but go ahead.
Be with me in this. Yes, there is an absurd number of things to watch right now and play. If you're into video games right now, as I am, it's just a weird confluence of so many incredible things to play in video games, so many incredible things to watch right now on the streaming services. I feel like my wife and I have like 6 to 8 things on our list that we need to finish up or start. It's just an amazing time right now for so many things. Another one that I have been looking forward to, I cannot believe it's already back, The Devil's Plan. Now, listeners to this show know I'm not a reality TV guy. I don't like the competition shows. I've never watched a full episode of Survivor. I don't care. I don't care about any of it. And yet, somehow, I got pulled into The Devil's Plan. My friend Lana Bashinsky would not stop talking about it. I talked at length on this show about falling in love with The Devil's Plan season 1 on Netflix. This is a Korean show that's basically cutthroat competitive board games. I'm a huge board game fan. I have hundreds of board games that I own and just love the medium of board games. So this was really catnip for me. And I got into it long after the show debuted, which works out great because it was really close to when season 2 was happening, which took a long time for them to put together. So season 2 has just hit Netflix, is coming
out. This is like when you got into Den of Thieves right before Den of 3 days before Den of Thieves 2 came out. That was amazing.
So I don't have good timing a lot in my life.
You've led a charmed life, Jeff Cannata, is kind of what I'm trying to say. Okay,
sometimes.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So here's the wild thing about Devil's Plan. A little of this is a repeat of what I said about season 1, but it is wild to me, and season 2 does it again, that you have a show where we're introduced to a very large cast of sort of celebrity characters, for lack of a better term, real humans. But this is a Korean show, so it's all like, this is an influencer and a model, and she's starting her own movie series and, graduated at the head of her class of Cornell and is registered as an actual genius. You know, it's like these people who do these ridiculous jobs that in America would be the sum total of their entire identity are also brilliant and have legitimate bona fides for being part of something like this. and it's over and over and over. It's like they're a model and a singer, and they were part of a boy band for 14 years. But also, they split the atom in their spare time. You know, it's like it's amazing that you just have these incredibly smart, dedicated, capable people, and they throw them into a big house, make them live together, and ask them to play very complicated, ostensibly board games with each other to earn tokens that will lead to one eventual winner winning a big prize. The twist on this one is that the prize is also determined by the capability of the group to play board games. So you have a game during the day where people are trying to earn their individual progress toward being the sole winner of this meta competition. And then at night, they have a different game where everybody has to work together to add to the prize pool. So you're depending on the group to all synergize and work cooperatively to build up the prize pool that only one of them is going to win. But it's in all their interest to make the prize pool bigger because they want to be the winner. It's a fun little hook. But ultimately, what the show really is just smart people working on really complex problems and also backstabbing each other deliciously. Have you watched any of season two yet, Dave?
No. Do I need to watch season one to get into season two? What do you think?
Oh, you haven't watched season one?
No, I haven't.
Oh, Dave. See, okay, so I think, no, you. This is a completely new group.
Cool, completely I can just group. Get right into season two then, you think?
You can. They kind of spoil some season one stuff
in it.
They assume you've seen season one.
Right, right.
And so they talk about, like, and all the contestants for season two have seen season one. So they walk in and they're like, oh, are you the so-and-so? And mm-hmm. I'm the so-and-so. And, you know, they're like talking freely about season one.
Uh-huh.
And season one had some big twists. And so they're like, okay, well, is that going to happen this year?
I see.
Dangerous in that sense. And season one is so good. Here's the crazy thing about season two. Every episode is like a full feature film length.
I'm looking at season one. Season one looks the same. Like season one, every episode's like 70 minutes, 70 minutes long. Yeah.
Yeah. These are like 90 minutes.
Damn.
These are of hour and a half episodes. And so I'm halfway through episode two of season two. So there's lots still to go. You don't even understand what happens in episode one, a 90-minute episode, until 20 minutes through episode two. It's crazy. And the thing that is wild to me about this show is that it breaks all the rules that you would have on an American competition show, because they throw these people into games that are incredibly complex, and they lay out the rules for the audience. The rules explanation for the game in episode one is like a half an hour long, and it is so dense and so overwhelming. And it literally, you're looking at what is ostensibly a spreadsheet. You're looking at this flow chart on the screen for most of this 90 minute running time. That's just numbers connected by lines and people sitting in rooms going, I don't know, 47. Yeah. 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 Let's do 47. It's like the driest, most cerebral, you know, it is not a not for the faint of heart, this show, and yet very compelling watching, because it's also putting people in a situation where they really have to betray one another. The first game they play in the first episode of season two is a hidden role, hidden traitor game, which are, you know, people who play board games have likely played something similar. The Resistance is a great example of one, or Coup. There's a lot of games where you have a hidden traitor. And so, you know, we call those friend ender games because people get, you know, you're forced to lie to someone's face. That's the fun of the game, is lying to your friends. And so there's a lot of juicy stuff that happens in episode one. But again, 20 minutes of episode two is literally like explaining what happened. And I really think this game, this show deserves an award for editing, because the editor's job in the show, I think, is at a level of difficulty so much higher than most any other show, certainly much more than any other reality show, because you have so much going on and you need to convey this very intricate sort of strategic layer that's happening from a bunch of different perspectives, because people are playing very different roles in the game that they're playing, which means their whole strategy is wildly different than somebody else's strategy. And you have to convey that, and things are happening simultaneously in different rooms. And the way you have to edit that to make it cogent, to make it followable, to sort of understand the personality of these people, and how you will lay that out in a timeline that makes any sense to a viewer. Because I, as I said, things are happening concurrently. People are running from room to room, talking to each other. And then you want the audience to be able to sort of play along to a certain extent and think, you know, have certain information hidden from them, from the audience as well, until the big reveal happens. It's a lot of spinning of plates. And this show does an extraordinary job of it. It is, in my opinion, an example of how reality can work and be good, because nothing feels juiced, you know, nothing feels, these are people who, like, when they are forced to betray each other, feel incredible guilt, and they just want to be decent human beings. It's not like, go tell Janet that, you know, you slept with her husband. It's like, it's that kind of reality TV manipulation doesn't feel in play here. I don't know if I'm wrong on that, but it doesn't feel like it, which I think is a big part of the reason I like it. It just feels like, make these people play interesting games with really big stakes and watch how they behave. And it's pretty darn compelling. I so far, you know, season one is still, I think, superior. This is it was kind of a rocky way to start this episode, because the game that they pick is so dense, mm-hmm. and it is so impenetrable. But I suspect season two is going to continue to be good. It's still interesting, and it's still worth the investment. So I really recommend people watching The Devil's Plan on Netflix.
Yeah, Jeff, I think I might just, I wanted to be with you in it. And so I was like,
be with me.
Jumping on to season two, right? But it sounds like it'd be a rough entry, right?
I don't think it'd be a rough entry. I just think it might make your eventual watch of season one not slightly happen. Less
right.
fun.
Right. Yeah.
Or not happen. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I'll try to catch up, Jeff. Try to catch up.
Be in it with me.
So when season two ends, we can talk about it here on the podcast again or something like that. Yeah. So, all right, cool. Devil's Plan season two available right now on Netflix. Something else Jeff Cannata has been watching. Hey, before we wrap up what we've been watching, I wanted to mention that I rewatched Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1 in advance of watching Mission Impossible The Final Reckoning, which is something that we all have our screenings this week, I think, to watch that movie. So very
this
exciting.
This was, if I recall correctly, your biggest disappointment of 2024.
I think it was. Yeah. And I think to this day, having rewatched it again, it is still very disappointing to me.
Or was it 2023?
It's a messy movie.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever year it came out.
I would say that this is probably my second least favorite Mission Impossible movie. Like, mm-hmm. Mission Impossible 2 down there now at this point. Although, you know, I'd say they're pretty close to each other. But I went and checked my Letterboxd review, and I was like, this is exactly, I feel I have, very often when you watch a movie and then years pass, your life changes and, you know, you change, your feelings change, and then you come back, you're like, oh, you know what? That movie was better than I thought it was. Like, that happens quite a bit for me. This is a movie where my opinion on this has not changed at all. And in fact, my estimation of this film has lowered since I first saw it.
I was also planning to rewatch it, and I feel like mentally I've also clocked, no, it's still the same movie. It's still the same movie that I think will also disappoint me, but go ahead, Dave.
Well, I was so obsessed with Mission Impossible Fallout, which remains my favorite Mission Impossible movie. I think I saw that movie in theaters like five or six times. Listened to, I'm going to say conservatively, 6 to 7 hours of Christopher McQuarrie talking about that movie on commentaries and podcasts. Like, I feel like I really understood what his style is, which is he riffs. He's an improviser. He riffs. He's like, we're just going to show up to the location and then figure, and then we'll find the action scene on the day. Right. And that worked extremely well for Mission Impossible Fallout. every single one of those fucking action scenes is a banger, man. Like the halo jump, the inside of the club, the bathroom fight scene, the whole helicopter thing at the end, the chase through the downtown London, like it's just like nonstop incredible action scenes. And so that technique worked really well for him. That technique does not work really well when in a pandemic has shut down like most of the world's economy. You need to start and stop and restart production like six times during the course of making your movie. And what ends up happening is, in my opinion, so I will try to not spoil Dead Reckoning Part One if you have not seen it yet, but I will say that they introduce a new character played by Hayley Atwell in Dead Reckoning Part One. They try to give her a lot of importance, and in my opinion, they should have done that with existing characters. Like they should have dedicated the time that they spent on Hayley Atwell to pre-existing characters that we already know, but they couldn't do that for a variety of like logistical reasons. And
also, some people are tired of shooting Mission Impossible movies. Like they want to do other things with lives.
They
which
want to maybe go into like a silo, for instance. You know,
just kind of chill. Just go deep underground. Yeah,
right. Yeah, I'm just hypothetically. And so that was a bummer. And what the movie just feels extremely disjointed. It feels like here's an action scene, and then here's an extremely lengthy, ponderous, clunky exposition scene to explain how we got to that scene and how we're going to get to the, and then another one to how we got to the next scene and so on and so forth. And so it just feels like this kind of disconnected series of action scenes. And some of the action scenes are quite good. Like I love the car chase scene through Rome. I think that's like really well done. Some components
fast cars, tight European streets. That's a good car chase. Always.
Some components of the final sequence in on the train are like really good, you know. So it's not like there's nothing good about it. I also really like Isai Morales as the villain. He's just like a cool dude. I like whenever any movie takes like, hey, here's a guy who's been around in Hollywood forever. And now we're going to make you understand how good this person is.
They Mark DeCasco's Isai Morales.
Yeah, they Mark DeCasco's Isai Morales. Many things about the movie are actually good. It's not like terrible. I don't think it's a terrible movie, but it is nowhere near as good as some of the best Mission Impossible movies. And it's also really, really complicated. Like the plot is really complicated. I'm really curious what this new movie is going to do to set up. Like, is there going to be like a previously on? Are they going to do it via the dialogue where they explain what they're doing? You know,
we'll
like
find out really soon. I feel like I'm right there with you, Dave. I have not rewatched it, but I have also listened to a lot of McCore interviews about this movie. I get a sense that he regrets a lot of this movie, at least in terms of like the trouble it took to make it and the difficulty it was like piecing it together. So I'm kind of wondering: was it Final Reckoning? Is the last movie? How is it going to be a response to this in some way? Like, okay, here, let's be tighter. It's 3 hours long.
Right.
Let's be more focused and be clearer about what actually is happening.
The other thing too is these are just some pre Mission Impossible reflections, right? Is because this will be the last podcast we record before I have seen The Final Reckoning. Top Gun Maverick was such like this beautiful tribute to Tom Cruise as an action star from old Hollywood. There's this beautiful moment in Top Gun Maverick that like kind of makes me cry when Tom Cruise is like about to go on this mission. He's looking out on the aircraft carrier and his superior officer says, you know, you're where you belong, Maverick. You know, like this is all Tom Cruise knows how to do.
Yesterday he was like on top of the roof of a building and people were just, Tom Cruise is on a roof. We don't know what's going on. But he's saying hi to the public, I guess. Yeah.
In the trailer for Final Reckoning, Tom Cruise says the line, "I need you to trust me one last time." And like we all think this is going to be his last Mission Impossible movie.
Yeah.
I personally think it could have ended at Fallout. Like that would have been a wonderful ending for the franchise. But they made two more. I am so nervous that this is not going to end strong, because I want it to end strong. You know, I think a strong ending would be worthy of what Tom Cruise has contributed and in many ways pushed the genre forward, you know, in terms of action and stunt filmmaking. So I am curious what kind of legacy this new one's going to lead. But the only thing I'll say is this: definitely watch a recap of Dead Reckoning Part One before you see The Final Reckoning, because it is really complicated. There's like all these new characters that are introduced and like the entity and what the hell the, I've watched the movie multiple times and like, I can barely explain to you what the entity is doing at any given point in time or what its significance is. Yeah. Although one thing I will say about Dead Reckoning Part 1 is the threat of AI has only grown since the first movie premiered. So it was prescient in many ways. But anyway, Dead Reckoning Part 1, still, in my opinion, not a great film. Still very disjointed feeling. Still with a virtually, it was just baffling creative decisions all around. All that said, psyched for Final Reckoning. Hope they pull this one out and deliver an ending that is worthy of Tom Cruise and this franchise. So that is what we have been watching this week.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month, so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit. Track budgets and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hey, Dave, before we move on.
Yeah.
I forgot to do this at the top of the show, but I need to do a mea culpa from last week.
Okay.
I often say I'm a Marvel zombie from way back.
Oh, yeah.
And I take pride in that. And, you know, the Thunderbolts review, some folks were very kind to point out I got a big part of Marvel Comics history wrong, and I'm ashamed. I have to turn in my Marvel zombie card, evidently, because I went on at length about the Thunderbolts and Thunderbolt Ross, the character that Harrison Ford plays in the newest Captain America movie, and the relationship between the team and that character, which is not wrong, but
incomplete.
Yeah. The team existed before they ever associated with General Thunderbolt Ross, even though he did become its de facto leader. And, you know, I did a whole I did the voiceover for Marvel's Red Hulk recap and had all that stuff very fresh in my mind. His relationship with the Thunderbolts and how he helped shape a modern version of the team. But when they were first introduced, that was not the case. So I somehow memory hold all of that. Mm. A number of very kind people reached out to me on Blue Sky and via email to point out I was wrong. Jonathan Blade on Blue Sky was like, "Hey man, don't feel bad. You know, it's 30 years old." He said that the piece of trivia is almost 30 years old. You don't even feel bad that you got it wrong. And I said, I responded with, 30 years old is like that's my wheelhouse. That's how I'm supposed to get that stuff right. It's the more recent stuff that I get wrong. It's the 30 years old stuff that I'm supposed to get right. And, so I apologize for folks, for whiffing on that one.
Yeah, Alan C. wrote into /filmcast@gmail.com saying the original Thunderbolts were created by Kurt Busiek and Mark Bagley in 1997. The team was actually Baron Zemo's Masters of Evil disguised as new heroes in order to win over the public trust after the temporary deaths of the Avengers and the Fantastic Four. So Thunderbolt Ross did not get involved until 2014. So,
yes, the
thanks to Alan for that. Yeah.
The quote evidently that inspired their name was "Justice like lightning ever should appear to few men's ruin, but to all men's fear." That's pretty good.
That's
justice
pretty good.
Like lightning ever should appear to few men's ruin, but to all men's fear. So they were the Thunderbolts, which is, I think, pretty cool. And a quote they should have used in the movie, I think. It's too good.
Always feel free to keep those corrections coming into /filmcast@gmail.com. Let's get to a few weekly plugs. Just a weekly plug. Weekly plug is part of the show each week where we plug something else we've been making. I want to throw a shout out to DecodingTV.com, free newsletter where you can get recaps and reviews of the latest episodes of The Last of Us by Matt Goldberg, as well as Andor by Dan Gavazdin. Check them out. If you are watching those shows and other shows that are going to be on TV, subscribe to DecodingTV.com to get reviews, recaps, all kinds of good stuff. Thanks to Dan and Matt for writing those up this season. They're doing great work over there. Devendra Hardwar, your weekly plug.
Yeah, I want to tell people to check out the Engadget podcast. We just had an episode talking about the Surface Pro 12-inch, the smaller, cuter Surface Pro that Microsoft just put out. I have a lot of feelings about that. It is very cute. It's kind of underpowered. It's a weird thing. Also, I talked with Astro Teller, the head of X. That's Google X, not the social media network. But we talk about, like, you know, what they work on over there. They're a big, they call themselves the Moonshot Factory. And I really wanted to know, like, is that still a thing right now? Like, we have a lot of problems in tech. How is X kind of handling the bigger, bolder ideas? So I think we had a good chat. Check that out.
Jeff Cannata.
I do a comedy science show called We Have Concerns. You can find it at wehaveconcerns.com. The newest episode is called Batman's Cocktail Party Mystery. That's not actually about Batman. It's more about bats and the fact that if you recall, anytime Batman falls and discovers, you know, any of his origin stories, he falls through into the bat cave and a bunch of bats fly out. Squeeze, 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 coming out. You've seen bats fly out of a cave. How do they do that? We know that bats are blind and don't navigate via echolocation. How could they possibly do that in giant clumps? Well, scientists were just as curious, and they actually figured it out. We talk about that story on the newest episode of We Have Concerns. It's fascinating. And also, we make it funny, because that's what we do, myself and Anthony Carboni. You can find it at wehaveconcerns.com.
I want to throw a shout out for our Patreon page at patreon.com/filmpodcast, where you can get ad-free episodes as well as exclusive after arcs. This week, we'll be discussing the very first Final Destination movie. Jeff's first time watching the movie. This is the movie that came out in 2000. We were so young back then, were we not?
We were so young. In so many ways.
We were but babes when this first movie came out. Anyway, Final Destination, and then in advance of our Final Destination Bloodlines review, we never want anyone to donate if it in any way causes them financial hardship. You can always support us for free by leaving a star rating for us on Apple Podcasts or a review for us. It really does help us out. You can also share our reviews on YouTube at youtube.com/@thefilmcastpod. See you over there. Until then, thanks to everyone who makes this podcast possible. It's time to talk about Fight or Flight.
What am I doing here, Catherine?
We're tracking a high-value target.
The ghost is a Black Hat terrorist.
Deliver the mark to us alive, you get your life back.
We have a big problem.
There isn't a country in the Western Hemisphere that doesn't have a bounty on the ghost's head.
Are you telling me that plane is full of killers?
Rough night?
Please open the door.
1 second!
You're looking for someone that's on this plane.
Uh-huh.
And other people I'm looking too.
Right. Can you focus on the change into?
Welcome to the Filmcast review of Fight or Flight. I'm going to read the plot summary of this movie from the internet. A mercenary takes on the job of tracking a high-value asset known only as the Ghost on an international flight. Realizing the plane is filled with assassins assigned to kill them both, the pair must work together in a fight for their lives, end quote. Fight or Flight, Josh Hartnett back in the saddle as the main star. You know, we truly are in the midst of a Hartnettissance. Devendra Hardwar, I am very curious. What did you think of Fight or Flight?
Yeah, as I alluded to earlier, I had a lot of fun with this movie. I think it's a really, you know, light and breezy little action movie, nice little B movie. I think some things are kind of hilarious about it. Like when Katie Sackhoff, who I love, shows up in a thing, it can go badly. It can go well. She unfortunately does not get the best project sometimes. I was like, I think she had a lot of fun here. I like her in this movie. But the whole thing, like the set she's in, the guy she's with, the like intelligence dude.
Yeah.
It looks hilarious. It looks hilarious. Like
it's not great. It's not great.
One guy has like his workout feels like you just have a white t-shirt. That's what you had budget for, basically. Like it's hilarious. But the actual setup of it, Hartnett on the plane, action on the plane, I think that's all really fun. I also really liked Charitha Chandran in this too, who has been in Bridgerton. I remember seeing her from Bridgerton. And it's just like a fun setup for an action movie. It's executed pretty well. You can tell, like, oh, you really just have like a set. You have a couple sets, right? You're on this plane, but you're not really going anywhere in this movie. But they do what they can with the material. I think like it's inventive at times. I had more fun watching this than I did with Novocaine, which is a movie I think trying to do similar things. You know, Novocaine also tried to be inventive, but I don't think held up on the action level or like, I don't know, actually being compelling to me. I cared a little bit about this guy, maybe not his relationship or whatever with other people, but it tries to have heart. It tries to do something a little more elevated than a simple B level action movie, and I appreciate that.
I don't know if I'd go that far, but what I would say is that Josh Hartnett, I think, definitely elevates the movie. Super talented actor. I loved his performance in Trap. And here he's delivering something a little bit different where at times he's kind of like wildly out of control and barely hanging on to his faculties. And I think he does a great job. Like he has shown, I think over the course of last year, he can anchor a movie in a good way. And I just really find him to be a compelling screen presence. We've had so many years in the Hartnett desert. And now finally we are just luxuriating in the heart renaissance, and we should all feel blessed about that. But yeah, in terms of the tone of this movie, I mean, it's clearly not a movie that takes itself very seriously. All that said, Jeff Cannata, I'm curious, what did you think about Fight or Flight?
Well, Dave, I guess you could say what I thought about Fight or Flight is best summed up in the form of a limerick.
Let's hear about it.
I just feel bad for Josh Hartnett. He hasn't appeared in great art yet. This renaissance can't be what he wants. This film's like the worst kind of fart. Wet.
Wow. Brutal. Also, wow. You're throwing shade at so many movies like Michael Bay's Pearl Harbor and also Oppenheimer. You know?
Well, also that Black Mirror episode where he was really also very good.
Yeah. Jesus, Jeff.
Yeah.
Everyone's catches strays from this one.
I think you missed a real opportunity here to play your favorite bumper song. Dave's B movies, Dave's B movies. Yeah. This is a B movie, and the B is for bad. Thought this movie was very bad. I will agree with you that Josh Hartnett is by far the best part of it.
Mm-hmm.
He brings it. He doesn't think he's in a B movie. He's going for it. And so much charm. So much. I just love his line readings, for lack of a better word. Like I can see what a line that he says when a line comes out of his mouth. I can see it on the page, and like he always attacks dialogue in such an interesting way. It always comes out of his face in a very interesting. Like I wouldn't immediately get to that reading from reading in just the text on the page. And I love actors like that. You know, I think that's Christopher Walken made a whole career out of that, right? It's just lovely to see him work. Unfortunately, this movie is, in my opinion, hot garbage. It's so uninteresting on every level. Hey, you want to see this movie? Go see Bullet Train. Or excuse me, not even go. Just watch it at home. Watch Bullet Train. It does everything this movie wants to do way, way, way better. It's just not on a plane. It's on a train.
But also with like 20 times the budget too. Like it's a,
it's a better movie. It's the same amount of time I have to invest. And this movie just, this movie wants to be funny. I never thought it was funny. It wants to be sort of hip and cool. It wants to have awesome action. I didn't think the action was awesome. There's a few moments where I was like, okay, I give it to you, movie. But it establishes, I mean, first of all, the way we get into this story is the least interesting way possible. You guys have already talked about Katie Sackhoff and her little bunker. Like we start the movie there. That's where we start the movie. It's the least interesting part of this movie and the least interesting place to start it. And it immediately made me like despise all of these people. It's baffling that you don't start with Hartnett or you don't start with the mystery at the center of this movie, which they solve within the first 15 minutes. And it makes no sense to me. It's like you establish this big question mark and then immediately like you have Hartnett solve it through no effort. Like he just knows. He just knows because he's
talking
that
about
cool.
Who is the ghost, right? Who is the ghost?
He just figures it out. And we couldn't possibly have as the audience. There's no clues. He just is that cool that he knows. And the movie becomes, in my opinion, wildly less interesting after we know. It becomes this other sort of buddy movie thing. And I just structurally, this movie makes no sense to me. Like the fun thing would be to like get us on the plane immediately and then chaos is happening and we don't know why. And oh my gosh, it's revealed who else is on this plane. Instead, we have all this exposition that leads up to it. This is a movie where people are like, as we both know, the ghost is a terrorist who works all around. It's like, why are you saying those words out loud if we both know it? You know, it's total movie exposition style of like, I need to say this for the audience's benefit, but we both know it. Everybody's in the scene doesn't need to say it out loud, but we do need to say it for the audience. This movie is exhausting, not fun, and it sucks because I think Josh Hartnett deserves better. He deserves better than this movie. Mm-hmm. And I would love to see him in star vehicles. I would love to see him as an action hero. Like he looks like he's doing a fair amount of his own choreography here and he's perfectly competent at it. He could be a movie star, like carrying movies, should be. He's great. Cast him as Hal Jordan, dude. Like what this guy could, I mean, not that I have, everybody has to be a superhero, but he could be. And I just think this movie is not worth his time, in my opinion.
This movie is one way in which the first John Wick could have gone wrong too. Like trying, like a stunt guy who has not directed a full feature before trying to come into the thing. You're right. Everything you're suggesting, Jeff, like, it would be better if you start with Hartnett, start with the mystery. It kind of makes some basic narrative issues. I still had fun with it, but I hear you.
I would agree with both of you guys. Like, I think all the stuff that's not Hartnett, all the stuff that's Nartnett, Hartnott is terrible. Like all the stuff in the bunker, all the Katie Sack, it is all just really poor on just an execution level. Like it just. Mm-hmm. The acting is not the greatest. The dialogue is not all the people are unlikable. I'm like, what? And what's terrible is, as you guys said, like we spend a lot of time there in the early part of the movie. We spend a lot of time there in the early part
of the
movie.
Don't make me look at the set. Don't make me think too hard about how these people are dressed. This is not helping you.
Those people should be coming in deep into act two.
Yeah.
We shouldn't even know about them. Like, who cares about any of those people?
Yeah. This should be a Jason Bourne situation.
Yes.
Right.
He's on a plane.
Well, this is the thing, Domingo, like, I remember watching the Jason Bourne movies, and there's like these endless scenes of David Strathairn and Joan Allen and whatever, Jesus Christ, it's Jason Bourne. I'm like, oh man, this is kind of boring. All these scenes are kind of one note. Then you kind of realize like how good those scenes actually were because they knew the actual, like, they actually knew you don't want to learn too much about those people. You know, you don't want to know too much about that office setting because
you don't start there.
You don't start
there. You start with the mystery. Yeah.
There is one fun joke in that place where there's like a new guy that nobody understands. Like that's a fun gag, but like not worth
it. Well, there is one other thing. We can talk about in spoilers, but.
Which I hated. But
I will say I thought the action was overall pretty great. Mm-hmm. And one of the cool things about the movie is Josh Hartnett is dressed in like pajamas for most of the movie. And that just makes it harder. Like it makes it harder to do the action in a way that is convincing because they have to wear like padding often, but like if they're wearing pajamas, hard to hide the padding. And, you know, so I thought the way they used Josh Hartnett, they used his wardrobe was very good. It's it's hard to do good action choreography on a plane. And I thought this movie did a pretty good job. There's not that many movies that I think do good action, extended action sequences on the actual plane itself. I watched like Hijack with Idris Elba, you know, I watch a lot of these movies and like, a lot of times the action is very limited. There's not very much action. And it's very ambitious to try to do a lot of action on a plane like this. And there's some really cool moments. There's some really shocking moments.
I like how you're acting like it's a real plane.
I know.
Yeah, it's hard to get on an airplane at 30,000 feet.
They're moving so fast.
They filmed this at 30,000 feet. I know for a fact.
What
explosive decompression actually occurred?
What's the Jason Statham movie where he has to fight on a plane and protect a baby at the same time?
That was one of the Fast.
That was one of the Fast and Furious.
That's good
stuff. That's a hard boil.
Good plane.
That's good plane. Yeah. That's good plane.
That's good plane.
Good plane. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But also, this movie only exists because of what you're saying, Jeff, because of Bullet Train. I was like, can we do cheaper Bullet Train on another form of transportation that is also tight and confined and people can't escape easily?
Bullet Train is so fun with fun characters, fun action sequences. I care about the mystery is actually interesting. Like, there's some fun twists. Like, this movie has none of the charm of Bullet Train for me.
Really, so
David Lynch. Let's go full back around. David Lynch. Yeah. Bullet Train.
Yeah.
You know?
Really missed opportunity to not call this Bullet Plane for sure.
Listen, double decker. I don't know if you guys have taken any of those like long flights into Asia, but that's kind of what this movie made me feel. Like, man, those flights were nice. I used to worry about flying to Taiwan for Computex and be like, oh man, airplane toilets and everything. The nicest goddamn toilets you've ever seen. Even like a restaurant. So like, this is a double decker plane. It's a luxury plane. I like the setting. Too bad it feels so fake, I guess. Yeah.
All right, let's do a few spoilers for this one. Spoilers for Fight or Flight starting right now.
I thought up an ending for my book.
It makes no damn sense.
Compels me, though.
I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end.
When I buy a new book, I always read the last page first. That way, in case I die before I finish, I know how it ends.
You can't handle the truth!
Inconceivable!
I came here to tell you how it's going to begin.
All right. I have to say, I did enjoy the reveal that they're not actually working for the government. It's actually a tech company.
So dumb.
Jeff, you were not a fan.
No. I mean, by that point, I was already actively hating the movie.
Yeah.
But also, it's just a dumb.
It makes even less sense.
Yeah, it's so dumb. It's one of those, like, because we can, and like we're winking at the audience of like, look how twisty this twist is. Look what we did. Look what we're saying. It's so self-congratulatory. You know, I did not care for it.
Yeah. When you throw a chainsaw into the main character's hand and he says groovy, it's like, yes, I saw that movie too. Come on. You had your chance to do this.
I mean, look, I'll say I did not see that coming, you know? And really? It's like, okay,
starts with the chainsaw. Then we kind of get a glimpse of the chainsaw.
No, not the actually. Chainsaw. The thing I said, Devendra. The thing I did not see coming that
the thing
be
that nobody cares about.
Company.
Yeah.
But it's like, isn't it fun? Like do you see? It's the tech company that is cutthroat and killing
the
people.
Real power. Oh, they're the real big brother.
The real scary
corporate. Ugh, who cares?
Yeah.
Not
it's
fan.
Not like the movie actually cared about that either. Like, that doesn't have any broader impact into the plot other than, oh, look at that little twist. They could, but they might as well be a government agency. Who cares?
I just like the idea of like corporations do, because there's this whole like cinematic lives of corporations. You remember the movie Duplicity, directed
Duplicity,
by Tony Gilroy?
I'm thinking Duplicity. Yeah.
Right, Duplicity, where it's like the idea behind Duplicity is, oh, there's these like people at the corporations doing corporate espionage. They like, They're tracking their own employees to make sure they're not being marks, right? And they're also infiltrating other companies and like stealing their secrets. And you know, there's these secret meetings where they discuss all their plans. And that's just delightful to me. The idea that might because first of all, I think that happens. That happens almost never. It does happen, but it's like extremely rare. So the idea that, oh, there's a company that like takes itself so seriously that it has a little bunker and it's like, we got to track where all this technology is going and so on. It's just funny to me. It's just a personal thing, you know, because I think it's also very implausible in real life. Anyway.
Yeah. Go ahead. It is time for a global reckoning of Duplicity. Like, come on. That movie was great. Now you're giving Tony Gilroy praise, you know? Like, that movie was also
I love
good.
It. I love that movie. I love it. It's like one of my favorite movies of all time. So,
But here the ghost was really doing good things, and we thought the ghost was a big bad terrorist, and no, it's just this girl who has ideas about how the world should be.
How did he figure out it was her? Like that? That's like one. If you're going to do one thing, if you're going to set up a mystery of this like notorious hacker, how did he solve that? And I really have no clue.
No, he's just that cool. He's just that cool that he could tell, and thinks everybody else will be able to tell. And so there we go. And it so happens so early in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, why even make it? The whole thing's dumb.
Mm-hmm.
And she somehow went through the interview process to become a flight attendant.
Yeah, she's also a flight attendant, but also just hacked the place and escaped. Like, you know.
Well, maybe she hacked her way into being a flight attendant. You know, who knows?
Well, she had to have a backup. She had to have a cover. And who travels around the world freely? Flight attendants.
And the fact that all the bad guys got on the same flight to get it's like that entire sequence of being introduced to that one dude who's like, "Tell me about my choreography." And I was like, "What move? What is this? What student film am I watching right now?"
It was very silly. Very silly. The first guy. Yeah.
It is interesting to compare this to movies like John Wick and Bullet Train, though. Like, what works about those movies, right, compared to this one? I mean, number one, I would say one of the big differences is star power. Josh Hartnett's great. The rest of the cast isn't Josh Hartnett, you know? Whereas in Bullet Train, you have, like, endless amazing character actors, and Brad Pitt is holding it all together. Keanu Reeves and John Wick chapters, you know, 1, 2, 3, and 4. Like, that's a big difference. I think the world building in this movie is not good. And that also makes a huge difference. Like, it's not a world where like, oh, like, let's peel back some layers on this. Let's like see more what's going on. No one wants that. Whereas that's
don't
not
ask too many questions is what this movie says.
Yeah. That's not the case with like John Wick, where it's like, oh, I want to see, what about all those women with the tattoos and the switchboards? Like, I want to see more of their situation. You know, like, there's none of that in this movie. But despite that, guys, out of the three movies I've just named, Bullet Train, John Wick, and this one, this is the one movie that is calling its shot and saying there is going to be a sequel. I don't know if you guys are aware, right?
But it's really bold. Really bold of them.
I couldn't believe it, honestly. I was like, really? That's unwarranted confidence. That's what that is.
Because this
movie had a production budget of $5 million.
I guess that
is less than John Wick.
Yeah, it's actually quite impressive that what they were able to achieve for that. No joke.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be mad if there was another one of these. It's a lot of confidence.
It made $2 million in this weekend. That's almost $5 million. They're going to get there. They get there.
Up.
Yeah.
In fact, that is a very rough opening for this movie.
It's really rough. Yeah. Hey, but also more low budget movies. Like I think one of the things I appreciate about John Wick was like, look at what they did with very little money, because that movie didn't have a big budget either. And you can feel the scrappiness of something like that. And you can kind of feel it here too, but you can also feel the
scene. Definitely feel it.
I mean, it's the scrap.
I always root for scrappy movies. Yeah. I like a scrappy movie, but I think the way
by
you
definition,
make
you're not rooting for this one, Jeff. So you can't always root for scrappy.
In the abstract, I root for scrappy movies. I'm saying the key to a scrappy movie is a good script.
Yes,
right.
I see.
Because that's the thing you get first. Everything else you're going to have to be scrappy about, right? Everything else is expensive. Get a good script first, and then you make that scrappy movie out of that good script. This movie had a just atrocious script.
This should have been a streamer, honestly. Like, this may have been more effective as like a, hey, this is like the thing you see late night on TV sometimes. This would be an effective like thing for a streaming platform to kind of highlight. Yeah.
I will give a shout out for the drug induced sequence in this movie. I actually thought it was kind of funny. I enjoyed this drug induced sequence more than I did in like the one in The Fall Guy, for instance. You know, like
that's one of the best drug induced sequences of all time in The Fall Guy.
Fall Guy was a lot more creative. I mean, this was like, what can we do in a room with no special effects? What can we do in a room with just the actor?
I'm just a sucker for whenever someone's like viewing some kind of reality and then you cut to what the actual thing is and it's very different.
That's fun.
It just always gets me every time. You know,
agreed.
I'm a
I like
man
that too.
Pleasures.
It's fun.
Yeah,
that's fun.
I like the idea that he gave him like horse tranquilizer, but because Josh Hartnett is just
right.
that cool, he it doesn't work on him.
Well, no, he was like, you can't pickle vinegar.
You can't
essentially like
he can't pickle a pickle.
Yeah,
you can't pickle a pickle.
Yeah,
which is funny.
Yeah. I think it's funny, but
I wonder if the casting call for this movie was like, do you have like a black pants and white shirt outfit? Just bring that. Just bring that to the interview and. Just bring that outfit back when you come to the movie if you get selected, because we need wardrobe help. We need a lot of help.
I am really curious if they're going to make another one of these. But I, you know, I think they're hoping it would do well at the box office, and it hasn't done well. Maybe if it's like really popular internationally, like they'll
how
be
did
able
this get a wide release?
Yeah,
how did such a this is kind of wild. Is it just the Hartnett of it all? I guess.
I think
Trap
Hartnett
was a hit.
That's true. That's true.
It's a relatively new company called Vertical Entertainment, you know? And so, like, oftentimes when, like, a company is relatively new in the distribution space, you know, I don't know. I'm looking at their thing. They actually had a lot of movies.
They've been around for a while.
Movies. Yeah. They've been around for a while. They did Emily the Criminal, a good movie that Devendra and I liked. There's a movie called Sacramento that's out on video on demand right now. They did The Order, which actually didn't.
Yeah.
Go that well, you know, in terms of, but anyway, so they're relatively small, and I think they probably still feel like they have something to prove, and that's why they released this one,
on 2000 theater screens.
Yeah. But like,
yeah,
with probably like a virtually non-existent advertising campaign. And so, you know, it's not going to go well, but yeah, it's,
that's how to sell a movie, by the way, is put it in physical spaces and don't tell people about it.
Yeah.
Just make it as inconvenient to watch as possible. Yeah. This will be a streaming hit. I feel like people will be all over this. Once this hits Netflix, it'll hit the charts. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
This feel like the kind of movie that does well on Netflix. Yes.
Yeah. 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 Okay. Here's a question for you guys. Fight or Flight or Havoc?
This movie, Havoc is too much of a mess. I'm sorry. I was the one who liked Havoc the least. That had better action. But I was more disappointed in that movie because I had no expectations for this one. So,
Jeff, if you had to choose again, Fight or Flight or Havoc?
I will take Havoc over this movie.
Right, because this movie like offends you. This movie offends you, this one, right?
Yeah.
Fight or Flight offends you.
I think so. And Havoc offends me because I know you're better than this. I know you're better than that.
And for me, guys, double feature, baby.
You've just got all the time in the world.
At the end of the day,
it
is impressive that James Madigan made a movie.
Havoc would be a good choice because you can get like a nice 1 hour nap in there. And then the movie starts.
That is true. This movie is shorter than Havoc. So
it
goes
into this. It's got that going for it.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. That's going to bring us into this week's episode of the podcast. The theme song for the film cast is from Tim McCune from The Midnight. Our spoiler bumper and weekly plugged music comes from Noah Ross, who I believe edited this episode. And you can find video assistance for this episode provided by Kurt Mega and John Barry. Next week on the podcast, it's going to be Final Destination Bloodlines, a movie that has been a decade in the making.
Oh, yeah.
Can't believe it. It's finally coming back, this franchise that has been so beloved to millions of people. Will it make the top 10 in our summer movie wager? Time will tell. Until then, we'll see you later. Goodbye.